No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are ya? It's time for a Tech Stuff Classic episode. This episode originally published on August 3rd, 2015. It is titled Tech in the Post-Apocalyptic World, Part 1. And Joe McCormick of Stuff to Blow Your Mind fame joined me for this episode where we talk about what tech will look like should, you know, the apocalypse actually happen. This was before the pandemic, y'all. We didn't really have an idea of what an apocalypse was going to be. And now we all know it mostly involves watching a lot of Netflix and trying to, you know, stay home and wear masks whenever we have to go out. But back then we didn't have any ideas. So let's listen in.
Thank you for having me on today, Jonathan, especially to talk about this really exciting topic,
yeah.
The complete and utter breakdown of society.
Yeah, okay, so first, Joe, before I get into the listener request that prompted this entire episode, I should let you know that the previous episodes that went up and were just recorded were with Ben Bolin about the Manhattan Project, so it dovetails nicely into this one. So this discussion actually comes to us because a listener, Benjamin G. McCall, on Twitter, wrote to us and said, after watching Mad Max, I'm wondering what tech would be viable in a post-apocalyptic world? Which tech would be jerry-rigged? So really, this is such a huge topic. We could end up having discussions about all sorts of different doomsday scenarios.
Yeah, I know one of the options we talked about for this episode was just coming up with a list of like the maybe weird tech hacks you could make in a post-apocalyptic scenario. But then we realized, like, we're not the inventors of the wasteland.
Right. Yeah. There are so many different science fiction stories out there that cover this sort of material that to to kind of, I mean, we could have, I guess, gone through each one and graded it on a plausibility scale, but that would have taken forever too.
Sure, but we figured maybe a better approach would be to say, okay, let's imagine there's a scenario that has represented a technological apocalypse.
Yeah.
Suddenly, all of the technology that sustains our lives that usually just runs in the background and keeps us happy without us even noticing what it does for us. What if all that went away?
Yeah, so we're not so much focusing on specific scenarios. We will, some of them will come into play because they factor into the contingencies we might use in the case of a catastrophic failure of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Like there could be some where you say, hey, what if we use blah, blah, blah? So, well, if the reason for the catastrophe was this, blah, blah, blah would not work. We'll get into that. But just some general catastrophes that could be the ones that lead into this. Nuclear war would be a big one.
Yeah.
Right.
So people always want to say zombie attack.
Zombie attack. Okay. So some sort of pandemic would be a possibility, okay. Right?
The more realistic version of the zombie attack.
And pandemics could end up being something that is directly affecting people or could be indirectly affecting by killing off, let's say, crops or livestock.
Mm-hmm.
Anything like that that could lead to famine obviously could also capitulate into technological failures.
Sure, like is imagined in the movie Interstellar, where they talk about the idea that there's a, like, crop blight getting into all of their food supply.
Yeah, so in that case, you could end up having a vast reduction of the population on Earth, which in turn would cause technological issues.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of other ones too. Super volcanic eruption.
Right.
Could potentially, at least for...
leading to catastrophic climate change. Really, anything that leads to catastrophic climate change would be a problem.
So really just waiting around.
Right.
Well, sadly, I wish that weren't the case. But so there are a lot of different scenarios that could lead to this. And we've got a whole bunch of different variations of that in literature. And at the end of this episode, Joe and I are going to talk about our favorite post-apocalyptic stories and scenarios. The reason why I'm putting it at the end is so that we have something wonderful to look forward to on our journey through terror.
Oh, but honestly, my favorite ones are kind of depressing.
So are mine. It's fine.
Well,
but I mean, it's kind of hard to have an upbeat post-apocalyptic scenario.
I promise you folks, you're at least going to hear us talk about Zardoz.
Yes. Zardoz.
But okay, what's the first thing that we need to talk about? The big tuna in the basket, as I might say.
Yes.
I think I said that recently.
I'm pretty sure that was a forward thinking, but I'm not entirely certain. But
let's
I remember
get that
tuna
big
in a
tuna
basket.
Out of the basket.
Yeah.
It's power.
Yeah, the power grid.
Yeah, the power grid, where our energy comes from, because almost everything that sustains our life depends on it.
Yeah, and on some form or another, if not directly, then indirectly, correct?
Yeah.
The power grid is the big one. Let's say that whatever the catastrophe is has hit the power grid. And we're largely going to be focusing on the United States because that's where Joe and I live.
Mm-hmm.
But power grids across the world have varying degrees of vulnerability. Many of them are very old. There are elements of the United States power grid that date back to the late 19th century.
Yeah, in fact, our current power grid is not necessarily... Oh, man, I hate it when that happens. Our...
present?
Contemporary power grid.
Yes.
Is not necessarily in the best of shape.
No.
This could come as a rude awakening to some people.
Yeah, so here's the deal. First of all, the power grid is incredibly complex. We talk about it as if it's this big united thing, but really it's a collection of lots of smaller things.
Okay. So in most basic terms, how does it work?
All right. Most basic terms, if you want to look at the microcosm, the individual element that makes up the power grid, you're looking at a power plant, something that is generating electricity through some means. There are a lot of different versions of this. There are coal-fired power plants that use coal to generate heat, turns water into steam. Steam turns a turbine. That's what generates the electricity.
Mm-hmm. You could have a hydroelectric plant.
Hydroelectric, that's using the power of water moving turbines in a similar fashion. There are wind turbines that use wind to do that. Solar generation, where you're really just converting solar power into electricity. That's one of the few that doesn't require steam.
Yeah,
or turbines.
Yeah, you've got, of course, nuclear power,
which is really like coal fired on steroids, except it's using obviously nuclear fuel, not burning coal.
Yeah, and no smoke.
No smoke.
Nice.
Yeah, there's lots of steam. Yeah, if you have designed it properly, it's perfectly safe. Mm-hmm. At least the operation is. The nuclear fuel and the waste generated is something else that is an issue, but we're not going to go into that because it's a side issue to what we're talking about today.
Though if you are interested in that, we did a couple of episodes of Forward Thinking about that.
Yes.
Sometime last year.
Yeah, those were a lot of fun. So definitely recommend those.
Fun might be a word to describe how we
it was
discussed
fun,
nuclear waste.
Fun in the sense of really trying to wrap your brain around something that is truly complicated, not just the technology, but the political and cultural side of it.
Yeah.
Then you also have things like there's natural gas, and there's also oil power plants that rely on oil, although that's a very small percentage of the ones that are used here in the United States. So you've got these power plants, they generate the electricity. The electricity is sent through a transformer, which steps up the voltage.
Right.
The reason for this is that the higher voltages will transmit over a greater distance with less loss of energy.
Right. So this is going to be alternating current.
Yes.
Going out through all of the wires of the grid.
Yep.
Out to the neighborhoods.
Direct current will not work in a transformer. You have to use alternating current. Mm-hmm. So, it steps up the power. You have different types of lines. There's a distribution power line that is pretty heavy duty. That's what carries the super high voltage. That gets stepped down by a different type of transformer for the power lines that you typically see in the neighborhood. So like the telephone poles that have the power lines dangling from them, particularly on a hot Georgia day. Those have been stepped down from the major transmission lines. There's another transformer that will step that power down again before it goes into a building or a home or whatever to be at the proper voltage for us here. So that's your basic setup, right? And the power grid is made up of lots of these. By the way, these power plants are run by different organizations, different entities.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all a unified thing here in the United States.
Yeah. It's not just like the government or something.
Right.
There are a lot of privately owned power generation companies.
It's not like the monopoly board where you land on the utility and you own it and that's all of it.
Yeah.
It's not the way it works. So
that's the real monopoly. You should be able to win monopoly as soon as you buy electric company.
Right. Like exactly. Like, hey, do you want power in your hotel? Guess what, buddy? I am it. So as it turns out, that's not the case. There are all these different entities across the power grid that generate power. And they're doing it with different types of hardware and software, which makes it even more complicated. And we'll talk about that a little bit when we get into cybersecurity. So, because of this complexity, there are lots of potential points of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And the complexity both cushions the power grid from failure and also is vulnerable to further failure. It all depends upon the actual conditions that exist at any given time.
Right. I guess in the best case scenarios, all of the interconnectedness of it would mean in some cases you have some degree of redundancy.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you think about the internet, how if a single computer goes down, traffic can route around it.
Mm-hmm.
The power grid's kind of like that, but depending upon where you are, you may, if a power plant goes offline for whatever reasons, if it is quote unquote tripped, which means that it turns off essentially for any amount of time, you may be without power until it's returned to service. So other areas might be able to receive power through rerouting or whatever. But the goal, of course, is to create a smart grid that can respond to those issues in real time. But the reality is we do not have a truly smart grid throughout the United States. It's not a unified system like that.
Here's an interesting fact I'm seeing in the notes that I wasn't aware of before.
Yeah.
So we've got 3 interconnected grids in the United States.
That is correct.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, the Eastern Interconnection, which you would think at first, oh, that's got to be the East Coast, right? Well, yes. It's the East Coast all the way out to the Rocky Mountains. That's the Eastern Interconnection. It's a large part of the nation. And then you've got the Western Interconnection, which is the Rocky Mountains to the Pacific. And then you've got the Texas Interconnected System, which covers Texas. big shock there. So I don't mean that in that electricity sense either. So I didn't mean to. But yes, you've got these three larger interconnected grids that collectively make the power grid of the United States.
We'll be back with more of this classic episode of Tech Stuff after this quick break. No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town, I use my smartphone to look up things to do, or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There are two related concepts when it comes to power grids that we want to talk about. There's reliability and there's resiliency. So reliability is how consistent is that power grid? How frequently are there any interruptions in power?
Right.
The fewer, the more reliable, obviously.
So if you're having frequent brownouts, that's not reliable.
No, it's not reliable. It would be rough too. And obviously we have had periods of that in the history of the United States and in different regions. Then there's resiliency, which refers to the power grid's ability to withstand adverse effects like solar flare activity or severe weather or, you know, an apocalyptic scenario, like if an EMP went off. By the way, if an EMP goes off, electromagnetic pulse, that's what that stands for.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a power grid in the world that is resilient enough to withstand a truly powerful electromagnetic pulse.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the interesting thing with those is that, you know, you hear about these, like, especially in movies, you'll see, Ocean's 11 uses an EMP at one point to knock out the security system of a casino. Cause if you're going to do it,
right,
you might as well go whole hog.
Yet then they get back outside somehow.
Yeah, yeah. It's a movie. But at any rate, the EMPs, depending upon how powerful they are, and how close you are to the pulse, that can affect all sorts of levels of electronics. Although, generally speaking, the larger the system, the more vulnerable it is, because the more likely it will have current running through it as a result of this electromagnetic pulse. It's the same principle that's affecting the transformers. It's just, imagine that it's this enormous pulse that isn't a controlled element of the power grid. So most EMPs would probably affect large systems like the power grid, but leave smaller stuff. Like the less complicated and smaller it is, the less likely it's going to be directly affected by the EMP.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so your battery-operated stuff might work for a while, at least until the batteries run out, even in the face of an EMP, unless you happen to be really close to where the pulse goes off. All right, so resiliency and reliability, two very important concepts. I read a report, and boy, was this...
Sort of a report card, actually.
It was a report card, yeah. The American Society of Civil Engineers released a report card that graded the United States on various elements of its infrastructure. And this came out in 2013. The whole thing is available online. It's a very interactive site that will depress you if you live in the United States, because overall, the U.S. got a D plus. And that was for everything. That included things like not just electricity and energy, but drinking water, bridges, dams, hazardous waste handling, and aviation were also in there. None of the grades were great.
So what's our like gym class grade that's weighting it up?
Oh, right. Yeah, some of them are a little better than others. Actually, D plus being the average, the GPA, that's also what we got for energy. So it's still a failing grade, but it's one of the higher ones. I mean, like, it's not a D, like, I think Bridges got a D. So like.
So what you're telling me is I really need to charge my cell phone before the zombies attack.
And you really need to make sure your commute home doesn't go over bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also, by the way, graded individual states. Not every state got a grade, but Georgia did.
Mm-hmm.
We got a C.
Oh, so that's better than average.
Yeah. We it's better than the average score for the United States. By the way, in case you are unfamiliar with this grading score, the scale of grading.
The schools not use that anymore?
Well, not universally, and we have listeners from all over the world.
Right.
So this would be a grade system that typically goes A, B, and C would be the passing grades. C being average, B being good, and A being superior. Then you have D, which is technically a failing grade, and you've got plus and minus as well. So on the high side, D plus would be, oh, you almost passed, but you didn't. I don't know of anyone who has ever used E, but F means fail.
I thought a D was just a shameful passing grade.
I always thought of C as, well, maybe, but I always thought C was passing. Like C minus was the, for me, the threshold of passing. Essentially, that was the equivalent, if you looked at it percentiles, a 70.
Folks, write in and let us know what you think about Ds.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a failing grade, but I could be wrong. F is outright fail. D is like on the cusp. So maybe, I guess if you're a glass half full kind of guy, you might say that D is a passing grade. D plus for energy. Energy, by the way, was not just the power grid. It was all the elements of energy in the United States, but they did focus quite a bit on the power grid. They reported the aging infrastructure of the power grid as a huge problem. Some of it, again, dating all the way back to the late 1800s. So it's pretty old. And they also said that these older facilities in particular are, they're prone for failure for things like just the fact that it's such an aging infrastructure. They're not very good at handling, adverse conditions like weather events or solar flares, that sort of stuff. And they said that the significant power outages in general are on the rise. They said there were 76 recorded significant power outages. They didn't define what significant means in the stuff I was reading, so I'm not sure exactly what that refers to. But 76 of them in 2007 and 307 of them in 2011. So it's a problem that is getting worse. So that's an issue. But they also had some less awful news in it. So they said that the United States is having a very slow growth in population in general. The rate of increase is fairly low when it comes to the need for electricity. So in other words, our population isn't growing so quickly that our need for electricity is outpacing our ability to generate electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there probably won't be a significant issue until around 2040. And that's saying that we haven't invested in our ability to generate electricity. They, of course, very strongly advocate that we should be investing in that, both in the power generation or the electricity generation and the transmission of electricity.
All right. Well, let's look at one particular type of threat to our energy infrastructure.
Okay.
How about a cyber attack?
Yeah, we've talked about this on Tech Stuff quite a few times.
Could foreign hackers just shut down the United States with some smart, malicious computer people?
Probably not the United States, but certainly elements within the United States, very targeted ones. Yes, because this is not a surprise. We have discovered, we being people in the United States, not myself in particular, that there are elements of code, malicious code, within several different facilities throughout the United States within our power grid infrastructure. A lot of them originating from China, some from Russia. But there are elements of code that clearly have been planted there, possibly as a way to weed out vulnerabilities and, in the effort to exploit them in some potential future. So it's not necessarily the case that these are all going to shut off on the same day. In fact, that's probably not going to happen. And it's largely because of what I talked about earlier, the fact that the power grid is actually made up of all this diverse, you know, hardware and software run by different organizations. It means that there's not a unified means of shutting everything down. So any attacks would probably be very specific, and people know to look out for this stuff now. So yeah. there might be individual utilities that are lagging behind because they're not paying enough attention to this problem, but it's not a universal issue. So in other words, it's kind of patchwork, right? You may be that the target you've selected is really vulnerable, but it also means that the effects are going to be localized to that area. You can't say like, oh, here's a big red switch, and when we push it, the lights go out. It's not going to be like that. Also, I don't know why I went German.
Why are they Germans?
Well, they're actually Austrian, but
oh, yeah, okay.
But it's just because that's where I go for my mad scientist.
It is the
character.
Best mad scientist accent.
It's
no
really
offense
good,
to our German or Austrian listeners.
No, or to our Russian ones who really agree that the Russian mad scientist is the best one. I mean, they all have their charms, is what I'm getting at.
Well, you know, one possibility that strikes me is you're saying that a cyber attack could potentially target a localized facility or small subsection of infrastructure.
Yep.
Though there's always the possibility that by doing so, they could trigger chains of larger events.
Yes. And this is where you have to start taking into consideration the specific conditions around that localized area.
So is this a scenario people have actually imagined, like a sort of a cascading series of problems that get bigger and bigger with infrastructure failure?
It absolutely is. Yeah. There have been studies that have looked at specific systems that have centralized critical nodes, which would be very much similar to the United States power grid. And if you were to target one of those important critical nodes and take it down, there's the potential to have this cascading domino effect where it would, the loss of that part of the power grid would put such a burden on the surrounding ones that they too could fail, which could potentially cause others to fail as well. It might not be a nationwide outage, but it might be much more significant than that one utility going down. For that to happen, generally speaking, you have to have other elements that are at play. Mm-hmm. It's generally understood or believed that if it's an average day, that probably it would just be the localized utility that was affected. But if other issues, like if it was at a peak demand when other neighboring utilities were working overtime to supply power because of the way that particular day is unfolding, then you might have a different situation on your hands.
I have to imagine somebody has tried to simulate this.
There have been a lot of interesting simulations that I looked into, most of which were saying, hey, it's not as bad as we think, unless, and it's always that unless,
I love
and
that
you're like,
unless.
You're like, I guess if things are aligned just right or just really, really wrong, then it could be really bad. In fact, in August 2013, there was an article in Nature Physics where scientists from the United States and Israel asserted that a cascading failure in a system, it depends on those few critical elements, but they pretty much guarantee that at some point it will happen. And this, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean that there was an attack. I mean, an attack could be the precipitating event that causes mm-hmm. this, but it could just be a failure. It could be a particular power plant in a grid fails, and conditions just happen to be right for other facilities to fail as a result of that. And then you have a rolling blackout that could be pretty huge. Or it could be a failure due to some other event, like a solar flare, which causes a similar event to an EMP going off. It's not good.
Well, maybe we should get back into the possibility of an EMP.
Okay,
or a solar flare. You know, any one of these high energy events that can sort of fry the components of our electricity infrastructure.
Yeah, this is super bad news. Like, this is stuff where it's not just that it shuts down the power, it does damage to the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, one of the other issues about this complexity we were talking about is you don't always necessarily know where the problem is ultimately, or which elements of your infrastructure are the ones that were damaged by this activity.
Stay tuned for the exciting conclusion of this Tech Stuff Classic episode right after we take this break. No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I can't fly without my portable chargers and noise-canceling headphones keeping me immersed, and I'd be lost without my smartphone. In a new place, it's my connection to the familiar. I rely on it to get directions around town. I use my smartphone to look up things to do or, most importantly, where to eat. In countries where I don't speak the language, my phone becomes a universal translator. And heck, it can double as a digital camera, giving me the opportunity to snap unforgettable pictures of the sights that inspire me and fill me with joy. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
So if it's a significant solar flare that shuts down power in an area, you may have to do some really extensive testing to figure out which elements need to be repaired or replaced. In the meantime, you've got people who are without power. Not only are they without power, a lot of them are going to be without any means of receiving communication to hear what the status is.
Yeah.
And the longer that goes, the worse things are going to get, right? Like people, some people will react all right. You know, they might hunker down or whatever. Some people might panic. You also have other elements at play that are going to continue whether you've been able to communicate or not. Things like hospitals having to treat patients. I mean, there are some major issues that have to be addressed. And meanwhile, you're scrambling to try and fix a broken system and you don't necessarily know where the problem is. That's the real danger with these events that would overload a power grid by putting a huge amount of electricity through a system that wasn't prepared to handle it. And there's not a whole lot you can do to prevent that. I mean, like, these are events that are outside of our control. The best you can do is make your system as robust as possible, mm-hmm. so that it can resist electromagnetic interference. But
what does that actually involve? I don't know.
I mean, really, mostly it involves separating elements out into microgrids. That's
right.
One of the things we could do is, instead of having these giant interconnected power grids, concentrate and create an infrastructure that has more microgrids that are only serving a small region. They can be interconnected with other systems still, but they're not dependent upon them. They're not as interconnected as the current systems are. That way, if a local event knocks out a few systems, they are not going to pull down surrounding neighboring systems in this cascading effect.
Mm.
It isolates the problem, which means that you can devote more attention to solving a localized issue than you would if it were a general nationwide problem. A nationwide blackout would be catastrophic. Like, you want to talk about post-apocalyptic. Sure, you might argue that it's not an apocalypse, but a nationwide blackout would cause enormous problems.
Well, yeah, we can, I guess, talk more about the projected consequences of that in a bit. But
yeah.
How about the zombie attack scenario? People always want to know about this. I have to kind of remind people sometimes that, like, that's not going to happen because zombies are sort of physically impossible.
Yeah.
But you could have something like a zombie sort of problem. You could just basically have a pandemic.
Right.
Really, really bad infection that spreads throughout the population.
So in this case, we're looking at a scenario where it's not necessarily physical damage to the infrastructure, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a dramatic reduction in human population, where you just don't have the people to run the systems anymore,
mm-hmm.
right? So let's say that you've got really terrible conditions where the people who would be running the power plants and the various utilities mostly have been wiped out. So there are very few of them left, along with giant swaths of the population in general. So how long would you have electricity? You are one of the lucky survivors of the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, Rick Grimes has not made it over to your house yet, so you're still on your own. How long could you expect to continue to have electricity? Well, this largely depends upon what style of power plant is providing electricity to your home and whether or not your home is on the grid. Now, I'm assuming your home is on the grid.
Right.
If you have managed to create an off-the-grid power scenario, you are in way better shape as far as how long your electricity is going to last.
Right.
But at least for the short term. But let's say that you are connected to the grid. Well, if you are getting your electricity from a coal-fired power plant, which, by the way, makes up the vast majority of power plants in the United States. More than 60%, I believe, are coal-fired power mm-hmm. plants. You would probably have electricity for, the event has happened. People have been wiped out. For maybe 12 to 18 hours after that event, you would have electricity. That's about how long the coal-firing power plants would probably operate at their best. Before shutting down automatically.
That's not great.
No. And that's because there are no humans there to keep the operation moving. Cause even with automation, there are things that require human attention. An mm-hmm. alarm will go off and you'll look, and it may not be that it's like a catastrophic failure. It could be something like you need to vent some ash out of the system. And if you don't do it, then it'll trip. It'll say, all right, well, this will get to unsafe levels.
Right.
So we're shutting down. And it's one
it
of those.
It says, I need an adult.
Yeah. And all it would take is to vent it. It's not otherwise a huge deal. It's not like it's leading to a catastrophic failure, but it's one of those systems that's put in place for safety that if it's not monitored and acted upon, the plant will shut off.
We need to get some robots in those plants.
Yeah. And well, there have actually been some people who have suggested that if this were an event where it was more gradual, like it's not a sudden thing where mm-hmm. humanity disappears. If it were more gradual, then you might be able to alter the system so that some alerts don't trigger an automatic shutdown anymore, because you prioritize what is the most important of the alerts and which ones can we absolutely not ignore and we have to respond to. Anything else, the power plant just keeps on going until it can't go anymore.
Okay, so is natural gas going to be pretty much along the same lines as coal?
Kind of. So coal, here's the other issue with coal. You only have a certain amount of coal stored,
right,
ready to go. And once that's gone, if you don't have people pushing bulldozers to push more coal into right. the system, you're out of fuel. So even if somehow magically the coal power plant works perfectly, you burn out of coal within a day. Natural gas is a little better. You will essentially continue to get natural gas to feed into the power plant as long as the pressure inside the pipelines remains constant. But that's a big if. I mean, any problem that would trigger one of those systems to go into shutdown mode would stop a natural gas power plant from operating. So you might go a couple of days, maybe, if everything went well. Like if there were if nothing was messing with the lines and no errors happened.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that part one. Next week, we will continue with part two. And clearly, at the very beginning of this episode, I was joking about the pandemic being close to an apocalypse. It was bad, don't get me wrong, but I don't think we could go so far as to call it a true apocalypse, thankfully. But, you know, keep staying safe out there. Be healthy. Be well. If you have suggestions for topics I should cover in future episodes of Tech Stuff, reach out to me on Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again. Release it.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
No surprise here, but you know I gotta have my devices when I travel. I would be lost without my smartphone. I use it for directions, to find things to do, and most importantly, where to eat. I rely on it as a digital music player to enhance my experience as I explore a new place. Oh, and sometimes I even use it to make calls and stuff. That's the kind of traveler I am. And if you travel, you know what kind you are, too. That's why you go with the Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card. If you travel, you know.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Hey, it's Andy, Mike, and Jason of the Fantasy Footballers Podcast here, and we're inviting you to join us live on NFL Plus following the first round of the NFL draft. Look, fantasy football, let's be honest, gentlemen, it kind of rules the world.
That's right, and we will be live with in-the-moment fantasy football reactions to all the first-round selections and all the craziest surprises. We never can predict what's going to happen on that first day of the NFL draft.
Lots of elite talent at the skill positions that will have a big impact on fantasy football this year. Are we going to get three wide receivers in the top 10? Are we going to break the record for the most wide receivers in the first round? Is there going to be a running back? I don't know.
And there's a lot of teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. We're really excited about their quarterback. Do they add a wide receiver? What are some of those best landing spots?
The Fantasy Footballers Draft Special will air exclusively on NFL Plus on Thursday, April 25th, following the conclusion of the first round of the draft. Go to plus.nfl.com to sign up today. Terms and conditions apply.